Happy Black History Month.
We are here.
Yeah. Is this a big deal for you?
The month itself?
Like Black History Month in general. Is it a big deal? Something excited about?
It feels more, yes, always excited.
Yeah.
But it feels especially more important
today
because people trying to act like it doesn't or shouldn't exist. Like we're not contributing or that we haven't contributed to this country.
Yeah, history is being rewritten as we speak. Monuments shut down, museum exhibits canceled.
Y'all
was at a comedy show recently.
You stay at a comedy show.
I love comedy, I love live music, I love poetry and plays.
That's like, that
and no
artistic
wonder,
side of the Pisces.
All my kids are in the arts for real, like. But I'm at this comedy show, Wanda Sykes.
Oh, yeah.
Hamptonian.
She's got a couple of shows coming up on campus.
She's killing. She's doing local small venues because she's prepping for another Netflix special. Okay.
She's going to film at Hampton.
Is she?
I really think she is.
That'd be a big deal.
I could be making that up.
Yeah.
But I feel like I heard that.
Oh, Hampton was in the house. Erin Jackson was in the house. Erin Jackson, you know, the Franklin Warrior.
She was on her.
Power grad.
One of her specials.
Yeah. And she not only was she on her special, but she also wrote for the Upshaws.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Which is over, but it's still streaming. She made this joke. She was like, there's a lot of white folks in there. It was actually very mixed, but it was probably 50-50 at a venue that when I go there, it's typically all black.
Okay.
And she's like, yeah, you might've heard of me on this show called the Upshaws, but half of y'all ain't heard of the Upshaws because y'all Netflix probably don't even show. And if you search for it, your algorithm's going to get all messed
up. It's going to get thrown off. Like, what is this?
But what's funny, she starts talking about current events. She starts talking about politics and Trump. And her whole opening thing, and I'm not going to steal her thunder, but she's like, you know, like, this Trump is so bad, I missed the 2016 Trump. And she starts going in on Trump and Republicans, all this stuff. And this white guy and his wife, they get up and walk out. And she's like, yo, are you a big, like, did I hurt your feelings? Like, what's going on? He's like, I could just watch CNN if I wanted to hear this stuff. And everybody's like, boo, boo. So so people's feelings are hurt right now on both sides in a crazy, crazy twist of fate. And it just reminds me of how divided we are because depending on what you're watching, who you're listening to, like we're being fed completely different perspectives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know on my side, like the things that I am paying attention to, I'm very upset about. And we've talked about a lot of this on the podcast.
For sure.
From the defunding of the government. I read this piece this week also. It was in The Atlantic and it was just the hundreds of thousands of government workers that have been laid off and specifically profiles of some of what they actually did and achieved.
Right.
We're talking about folks that dealt with famine from USAID, folks who literally the people that coded the human genome, which was a major scientific accomplishment, fired. Folks who just did amazing things.
Smart people.
Smart folks.
Effective people.
Effective folks.
Black people.
Black people. So speaking of black people, so today we're going to be celebrating Black History Month for a lot of this month. And today we're going to be blackety black. We are going to be talking about...
Blacker than Black Card Revolt Black.
Ooh, even blacker than that.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
Maybe not a fun fact.
Okay.
My husband has also not seen Friday end to end.
So really, we got to cancel y'all whole household. I'm sure your kid, at least your daughter has seen it. I know.
I don't know.
I'm sure she has.
I don't know.
All right.
We'll find out.
Text her.
I know my son is not.
Yeah.
We'll
give him a
We
pass.
Make him watch things for the culture.
If she hasn't seen it yet, she will have seen it by the end of this year.
I predict by the time she matriculates through my alma mater.
That's funny. Yeah. But blackety black. So we're talking about black unicorns today. This is one way that we're going to celebrate Black History Month.
Are we unicorns? Are we like horses with emerging horns?
You mean momentum yes. advisors? I personally
momentum
think,
advisors, Alan and Andrea. Sometimes I feel like we're unicorns.
I definitely am a unicorn. Yeah. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But like, what's a unicorn? A unicorn is rare. A unicorn, you know, is a mythical thing.
He just said he's more rare than me. No. Fine.
We are both unicorns.
I'm not a founder.
I just gave it to you. What are you talking about?
I'm just messing.
And in finance world, unicorns really are these venture-backed startups that are worth over $1 billion.
Okay.
Like for a unicorn to exist, I mean, it's very
So we're
rare.
Not that.
We're
but,
not that, but I think we are unicorns in other ways.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. We are definitely, our firm, where you're a partner, we're one of the largest Black-owned independent wealth management firms in the country. That, I think, qualifies as a unicorn.
We're on the road to a billion.
And what's crazy, when I found that out, I was shocked because our firm is only 12 years old. Actually, no, 14 years old.
I was like,
sorry.
I think we...
14 years old.
We grew up some. Mm-hmm.
And I know Black folks have been doing stuff on Wall Street for 100 plus years.
Yes.
But it kind of highlights the fact that the opportunities for entrepreneurship and ownership in this space have been kind of limited because the playing field hasn't been even.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about some Black unicorns. And just to set the stage, like this year is going to be a big year for IPOs, initial public offerings. Some of the companies that are planning to do IPOs this year, a lot of AI and heavy tech stuff.
Naturally.
We've got OpenAI, which owns ChatGPT. Made you laugh?
I'm thinking about the incestuous relationship that we talk about among all these companies.
I thought you wanted me to say ChatGPT. A lot of people seem like they say ChatGPT. It's GPT, but whatever.
Mm-mm.
You got Anthropic, who has this AI system called Claude. And then you've got SpaceX, Elon Musk.
Yep.
SpaceX is another one. And these and OpenAI and SpaceX, they're saying are going to be the two biggest IPOs ever, but like the valuations are the highest ever. Like these companies are going to be valued when they go public at nearly $1 trillion.
Crazy.
Yeah, there's not a lot of companies worth over $1 trillion that are publicly traded,
right?
Let alone a brand new IPO. In fact,
that part.
This week, I read an article that said Elon Musk is going around to all the index providers, the NASDAQ, and saying, hey, can you put SpaceX in the NASDAQ to help drum up some interest?
Wow.
And these index providers, I mean, like, he's trying to, you know.
I'm not mad at the ask, but.
Technically.
I'm not surprised by the ask.
To be a part of an index like the NASDAQ, you need to have been listed for at least 2 years.
Right.
You need to be profitable. Mm-hmm. And clearly, like, none of these companies are either one.
Correct. That's
not
what I mean.
Not profitable.
Right.
Not even public yet. So, yes, the world's excited about these big unicorns. But, like, we got to highlight the fact that there are some Black unicorns out there as well.
Yep.
And let's talk a little bit about this. So, 50 million new ventures are launched annually. And these are, when we say ventures, this is like companies that are seeking venture capital.
Right.
Okay. The probability of reaching unicorn status is about 3 in 5 million.
And that's like 0.00000 something percent.
Yeah, because there's only 1,590 unicorns out of the 50 million that start
right
annually.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the decades that, you know what I mean, that these stars have been around. And so it's really unlikely. Typically, it takes about 7 years for a company to reach unicorn status. And there's some Black ones. And we're going to talk about that today because we got a couple of Black unicorns.
Let's do it.
So,
because people have you out here thinking that they don't exist.
Yeah. The other thing, too, that I think is really important about this conversation, when people talk about buying Black, they often talk about supporting Black business, right? And I hate to hear that word support Black business because we don't talk about...
What does that mean?
We don't talk about supporting any other business. When you hear that word support, you typically hear charity after that. I'm going to support that fundraiser. I'm going to support my college by writing a check. But when you spend money at Nike, you never say, I'm going to support Nike today.
Right.
I'm not going to go and support Louis Vuitton.
Right.
You're just going to buy it.
Yep.
So in talking about these unicorns, I want us to really shift how we see Black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do business with Black businesses.
Correct.
We need to spend money with them. And we also need to be aware that we are out there and we are successful and we are big. And we're beyond just selling fried chicken.
Or incense or body butter or
hair grease,
hair products, not the grease. And don't get me wrong, there's a market for all of that. And if I have a choice of something that works for me and it's Black owned or made for me,
yeah,
I'm going to give that a second look.
But absolutely.
We are more than that.
Yeah.
Is all I'm saying.
So back in the day, we had the Green Book. The mm-hmm. Green Book was like, this was a guide for Black people traveling throughout the country to know where it was safe to go in the Jim Crow South and in the racist country that we have.
Wasn't that long ago.
Not that long ago, 1936. I mean, that's less than 100 years ago. And yeah, it was a business directory, but it was also like a guide to a parallel economy that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These were businesses that like we only could shop at back then. And we needed to know where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And like today, there's a lot of those out there. And by the end of the show, we'll talk about some of the ways, the new green books that are out there. But again, we're changing how we see ourselves as entrepreneurs. We want to change how we see ourselves as consumers. Everyone knows that Black folks got some buying power.
That's
this
right.
year is estimated we have over $2 trillion to spend. That's loot.
And we will spend.
Oh, we certainly will. And we want to make sure that we are spending it, not supporting. But right. spending it with our Black businesses. And what I love about this list as we go through it, I bet money there's some of y'all that didn't know some of these companies were Black owned or Black led.
For sure. And on the flip side, I'll get clients, family, friends who want to buy Black,
mm-hmm.
but they don't understand that what they're buying is a brand and not necessarily a company. So mm-hmm. that company doesn't have publicly traded stock.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting situation. And then maybe it's not considered a unicorn, but I think about companies that are led by Black people that might have products or services where Black people are considered,
mm-hmm.
but the leaders are themselves Black, but the products or services can be used by anyone.
Yeah.
It's just something that I think about.
Yeah. And also, like, by the way, there's another Black business I want to talk about real quick before we get into our unicorns, because
okay.
they're all around us.
Yeah.
Have you been paying attention to this unrivaled basketball
yes.
league?
Mm-hmm. All things sports. Yeah. I'm paying attention.
So I've been seeing this show up. Like when I go home, like I watch sports, so I just click like sports, show me what's on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been showing me all these team names that I don't recognize. I'm like, what is this?
Right.
And so I started watching, and this is such a dope story.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this league called Unrivaled, it's been out for 2 years now. This is the second year. And it's basically the chance for women who are the top players in the WNBA.
That's right.
To play ball professionally in the States during actual basketball season.
3-on-3.
In America.
It's 3-on-3, right?
It's 3-on-3.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to go over to Europe and play.
What a concept.
Because by the way, your first show that you did on this podcast.
Yes.
When we talked about.
The sister tax.
The sister tax.
Yep.
And what did we say? We said the biggest issue with the WNBA is that the season is short. It was designed to be a sideshow for the NBA. It's only in these couple of months when nobody's paying attention to basketball. It's after the NBA is mm-hmm. over. And so this league is doing well.
Yeah.
The other day in Philadelphia, they set a record for professional women's basketball. They had over 20,000 people attend a sold-out arena in Philadelphia where the 76ers play.
This is entertainment.
And
this like, is not it's this is not 1998 WNBA.
And what I love about it the most is like this is a Black-owned venture because one of the founders is Nafisa Collier, who we know is one of the all-time greats from the WNBA. And it's also women-owned, so it's women and Black-owned. So Breonna Stewart, who's an incredible WNBA player as well, a legend for sure. She's a New York Liberty player. And it's also backed by Wanda Sykes, Hamptonian. So you got
right.
Black players, you got Black women, like investing, running, playing. Like this celebration of Black History Month, this conversation of Black unicorns, it's like this idea that like if we are going to be successful in business, we gotta like think big.
We gotta branch out.
Yeah.
We are not a monolith. We say it all the time, but
yes,
we're really not.
This is a conversation about equity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conversation about ownership. It's a conversation about, look, we can sit around and wait for, because what's funny, what's happening right now, the WNBA is in contract negotiations and they're stalled. Like the players made their proposal. The league basically said, yeah, we ain't trying to hear that. And they're stalling. So you could sit there trying to fight the system all day, or you could go and start your own thing. Like that's the story of Momentum Advisors. Like we were trying, like I tried my best to make Goldman Sachs more diverse. And I'm sure you tried your best at Merrill Lynch to like
that's
have
right.
a career there mm-hmm. and to make sure that there were opportunities for the Black folks that came after you. But we get mistreated so much, so regularly.
Listen, I was talking to some of our young employees today who, without trying, remind me how old I am.
Yeah, today you got asked if we had credit reports.
If we had credit reports. Did they have credit reports back then? I was like,
girl. In the 1900s?
Oh, man, it was too much. I was saying how my first job out of college, I worked for a major accounting firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, and accounting firms at that time, and maybe they still are like, law firms, you come in with a class, mm-hmm. right? So I'm the fall 92 class, right? So you're in training with your peers and, you know, they refer to you by mm-hmm. your class, the year ones, the year twos, so on and so forth. At any rate, there were two Black employees in our fall, fall 96 class.
Mm-hmm.
One female, that was me, mm-hmm. and one male.
Yeah.
And we learned over time that we were the last to get our offers.
Wow.
Which let me know that we probably, if it weren't for affirmative action, we may not have been there.
Lord.
That didn't mean we didn't deserve to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It just meant they earmarked two spots to make sure that at least two of us had an opportunity. And so I'm just thinking about that. And if that's all gone away now, then we're not even getting chances to compete in these spaces. So to your point, some of us are like, fine, I'm not even going to try. I'm going to go do my own thing.
Yeah, like I could keep begging for a seat at the table or I could go get my own table.
That's right.
And that's what Unrivaled is out there doing. And hats off to them. And like that, they got a TV contract. Like this is on major broadcast television right now.
I'd watch it. I didn't last year, but I just...
Oh, I watched
it. I had a lot going on last year.
I watched a couple games. Very entertaining basketball. Yeah. And like, it's stars. Like, I'm thinking...
Right.
I'm thinking,
you're thinking it's
like
the
Big Three.
Yeah.
Big Three is like the stars of yesteryear.
Yeah.
Like, you're seeing guys with little beer bellies and mm-hmm. a lot of gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are like current...
Current players.
WNBA.
Yeah.
And like, it's just showing, like, as they fill out a whole arena in Philadelphia. They're only playing the games in Miami. They did one road game in Philadelphia, but as
so you're literally getting good athleticism and entertainment.
Yes,
you're getting both.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fashion that's weaved in, the fan experience, like all of that is a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for it.
And they're saying that the ticket prices have averaged $165 a ticket in the resale market, which is rivaling what the Sixers make and what the Flyers make. Like this was my hypothesis back then. It's like, look, if you give women the chance to play professional basketball during the NBA season, you're going to be shocked at how well they do. Because like, yo, why are so many people watching college women basketball and so few watching the WNBA?
If you give women the chance to do anything.
Yes.
If you give Black folks the chance to do anything.
Come on an even playing field. Yes.
But they don't want that.
Yeah.
They'd rather have the systemic privileges in place because they feel like others feel like us winning means they're losing.
Yeah.
And we can really all be winning.
And what's crazy, we do so much more with less. Like, think about the fact that in venture capital, less than 1% of the venture capital funding lands in the hand of Black founders.
Right.
And despite that,
mm-hmm.
we still have three Black unicorns valued at over $1 billion. And there's only 1,500 of them in the country. And the odds are one in how many million? And so we're going to go to break because we're feeling good. We're talking about Black History Month. And in particular, we're highlighting the Black unicorns and also some of the Black startups that are out there raising money and competing in ways that really are breaking the mold for what is viewed as a Black business.
Let's keep the party going. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
Okay, so we're back. Mm-hmm. We've been teasing these Black unicorns. Let's get into them a little bit. So the first one is Calendly.
Love it.
Like, come on. I know you know, but like, did you know? Like,
Right.
Like, Calendly's a Black-owned company.
I didn't know until I got here and started using it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, what I love about Calendly, they're not out there like, hey, support us. Like, Calendly got big.
They out here providing solutions that's helping people get their lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean.
Come on, you know how I am about my calendar?
Yes.
Like, Calendly changed my life.
Yeah. Yours, mine. I mean, it's an integrated part of our everyday business. And
that's
we
right.
didn't do it because it was a Black business. We did it because it was a great solution and it happened to be Black. And
yeah.
we ain't supporting Calendly. We're using Calendly because we need
right.
help scheduling
exactly.
with stuff.
Exactly. Yes.
So Calendly was founded by a Nigerian brother named, I want to make sure I say this right. It's Topa Awatona.
Okay.
I don't know if I can say it again.
But I said it right the first time.
Topa
did your best.
Awatona. And Topa was a salesman. He was at big software companies like EMC and Perceptive Software. And what's funny, like when you think about the Black inventors, like there's all these memes going around about Black inventors and what would it be like if we didn't, you know, have Black inventors and like you see the person reaching for the toilet paper, there's no toilet paper there. Or you see the person at the traffic light or at the intersection trying to.
I've not seen these.
Oh, yeah. Maybe your algorithm ain't Black like mine, but that's all I'm getting on my feed right now. So many of our Black inventions simply stem from us doing the work and like running into some pitfalls. So here's my man, Topa Awatona. He's in sales and he spent so much time trying to coordinate meetings. You remember what it was like before Calendly?
Yes.
Hey, so I would love to meet. Why don't you send me your availability?
Mm-hmm.
They send you theirs. Oh, well, I can't do that. How about this? Oh, I can't do that. How about this?
You spend a week just trying to sync your schedules.
So he started searching for a tool that was out there and like nothing would fit his standards. They were clunky. They were built for large companies, not individuals. Like, for example, like Microsoft thinks it could do calendars, but it works best if you also have Outlook. Like, what if you're dealing with somebody with a Google Calendar? Like,
right.
So instead of trying to make it work with what was out there, my man was like, yo,
I'm going to build my own.
And my man went all in. Like, the thing about my man Topa, and this is crazy. Like, are we willing to do this? Like,
right.
My man took his entire $200,000 out of his 401k.
Yep.
He maxed out his credit cards.
Yep.
And he basically said, look, if I'm going to fail, I'm going to fail big. And I love that because, by the way, guess who else emptied their 401k to start a company?
Listen.
I did.
Yeah, like, I mean.
Guess who else maxed out credit cards? I did. And what's crazy, like, he didn't have the money. So his funds were limited. So he had to go over to Ukraine to find coders to help develop the tool. Then he was over at Ukraine during times of unrest and protests and war and all that. But he was able to make it work. And because he didn't have the marketing budget, because here's the thing about any kind of like B2C
mm-hmm.
business to consumer business.
Yeah.
Typically, they get killed by having to spend a lot of money on marketing.
Mm-hmm.
What did Calendly do? He built a viral marketing thing. Like when you send somebody a Calendly and they see how easy it is to set up the appointment, then they're
yeah.
like, yo, let me look into this.
Let
Calendly
me try
thing.
This.
And that's how we did it.
I love it. So what he did in terms of emptying his 401k and using mm-hmm. all of his cash, like as fiduciaries, we can never recommend that.
Yeah.
But real talk, sometimes when you hear, first of all, we know our clients really well, most of them, if we've known them for a long time. And every now and then you encounter a person who you know is driven and you're like, I know I should tell you not to do this, or I should at least educate you on the risk of doing this. But in a way, you're kind of like, go, brother, go. Go, sister, go.
Word.
Like, I just believe it's going to work out for you. And so it's hard for me to show that because I know what I have to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's like, yeah, in this case, it makes sense.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
And you don't always know what the outcome is going to be.
And I'll tell you this, like, as an entrepreneur, I value control.
Mm-hmm.
I feel more secure about me putting money into things that I am in control of with my effort.
Right.
Then I do the stock market at times.
Right.
When I look at my net worth, my biggest assets are businesses that I've got an ownership stake in and control over.
Yeah.
And somebody will look like a traditional financial planner. And Andrea is my financial advisor as of today. As of 5 minutes ago. You know.
Did you sign the agreement? Because I can't get paid.
Well, send me a calendar.
I'll send you a calendar. Okay, we'll talk about it. I'm kidding.
So yeah, he bet on himself and it's paying off big. My man is now, the company is now valued at $3 billion with a B. He still owns a very large stake. And my man is one of the wealthiest Black tech founders in the world right now.
I love it. I believe in the solution so much that learning these details, obviously we're on the other side of it, but It's a beautiful thing.
And then the final thing I'll say about these startups is a lot of times they're not profitable until after they go public with an IPO.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're going to see articles in the near future about SpaceX, about OpenAI. These companies are raising hundreds of billions of dollars collectively. And most of them aren't profitable yet.
Yeah.
Like they need, in order for them to scale, it takes so much of a big investment it's not until they're already public and selling stock and issuing bonds that they'll ever start to be profitable. So Calendly, because he didn't have the money, like he funded it with revenue. Like it's a subscription business and it's already profitable.
Yeah.
And so by the time, they went to Silicon Valley, they went to the venture capital companies and said, hey, would you invest? And a lot of them said no. But by the time they took their first major outside investment, they were already turning a profit.
Yeah, I love the viral marketing element. And when you think about it, there are certain brands or services over the years that are so prominent and dominant in their industry that we refer to everything by that brand name.
Yeah.
Right? If Google. I gave you Google, right? Mm-hmm. Every search engine is Google, even if it's not Google.
Yeah.
Every jar, no one says petroleum jelly, it's Vaseline.
Mm-hmm. Q-tip.
Q-tip. But that's what's happened with Calendly.
Underoos?
Not.
Sorry.
I don't know about that.
I had to throw you off.
You had to. In my circles now, people say, oh yeah, send me your Calendly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say, send me your scheduling link.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they don't say that. They say, send me your Calendly.
And how often do you even think about that being a Black-owned business?
Right.
Yeah.
On top of it. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Another one. Esusu.
Mm-hmm.
Esusu is valued at over $1.2 billion.
And with a billion with a B.
Yep. Esusu was founded by a Black woman and an Indian brother, Abby Waimimo and Samir Goel.
Look at you.
Listen, I'm on a roll now. I probably butchered at least one of those names.
You were confident with it though. So if you know, you know. If you don't, you don't.
So this again, this is a business that was founded out of necessity. Like Esusu is a business that it helps regular families to build credit by reporting rent payments to the credit bureaus. Like today.
I'm being educated. I didn't know about this company.
Yeah. The things that end up on your credit score right now, it's typically credit card company items.
Yep.
It's personal loan items. It's your mortgage. And
medical debt.
Yeah,
that's one of the things they were trying to do away with.
Yeah,
but
a lot of times it's bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like typically no one's telling good stuff.
Right.
So Esusu is like changing that. So basically if you are a renter and you're paying your rent on time, then it can actually put your credit score on the rise. It can give you a positive impact on your credit score. That is a big deal. And just like a lot of other Black founders, this company started out of necessity. So Abby Wamimo, she's Nigerian. They moved to Minneapolis when she was a kid. And she saw her mom try to get a loan from a bank to pay for Abby to go to college. And despite her mom being a hard worker, mom had no credit history.
Yeah.
She wound up taking out, instead of a student loan, like, you know, the things that we complain about that were is actually a privilege, right? Yeah. Her mom had to go out and get a predatory loan with a rate of over 400%.
That's beyond predatory. That's just...
Yeah. Because they realize, like, for most families, especially working families, immigrant families, your biggest expense is rent.
Yep.
And, like, unless there's a major hardship, like, folks are going to make sure that they pay the rent.
Right. So it puts you in a position where you experience the downside. If you don't pay your rent on time, that can show up in your credit report. But what effectively she's done is made that cost, turn that cost into an asset.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, how can something only work against you?
Mm-hmm.
She set it up so that it can also work for you.
Yep. It's Susu. I'm actually friends with, and actually I've invested in Zeal Capital, Nasir Kadri, also a Hampton Pirate.
All over the place.
Nasir is like a little brother of mine.
All hail to the Hampton Pirates.
We are the
rulers
Bears.
Of the sea.
We don't take no mess.
That sounds like a Black cheerleading squad if I ever.
Stop in your chest. No, go ahead.
Wait, no. That's a cheer or chant. That's not the fight song.
Morgan, we love
No.
That's our
not the alma mater song.
The first one
was the fight song.
That's our cheerleading
like,
song.
When the football team scores a cut touchdown.
We are the Bears. What? We don't take no mess.
I wish we had video.
Get mad in a minute and stomp in your chest. Sorry, go ahead. What do y'all say when y'all score a touchdown?
The fight song, the words to the fight song are all hail to the Hampton Pirates, rulers of the sea.
Okay.
All hail.
You gotta sing it though.
The whole thing?
I'm saying you just sang it. Like y'all don't just say it.
All hail to the Hampton Pirates, rulers of the sea. All hail to the Hampton Pirates, best team they'll ever be.
Okay.
All hail, hail to the mighty Hampton Pirates, hail to the white and blue.
Yeah.
It's H-A-M-P-T-O-N, Hampton Pirates fight to win. Hampton Pirates, we love you.
Hey, I love that. And then y'all.
You don't know your fight song though.
I just did We Are the Bears.
That's the cheer. That's not the
fight. That's what we do.
The song that the...
There's a song with no words, but then that's what we say. That's what everybody
but
says.
But the band doesn't play a
they
song?
They play a song, but no one sings it.
But it doesn't have lyrics.
Correct.
Okay.
We say, we are the... Ask any
that's
Morgan
Blackity Knight. Black.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then after y'all sing y'all song, y'all toast your Merlot or champagne because y'all so bougie. I was speaking with one of my boys. One of my best friends went to Hampton, Joaquin Gilliard. And I was like, "Yo, Wack, you're the first person I ever saw with a blazer on with patches on his sleeves." And ironically, you went to Hampton University, and I'm sure you fit in quite well there.
You said something to me when I came into somewhere we were, and I had a blazer with the patches on the elbow, and you were like, "I'm like Jesus."
Yeah,
it's very Ralph Lauren.
So
can't
Susu.
Lie.
We were
anyway,
talking about Susu.
Yes, a Susu.
My homeboy. Little brother, Zeal Capital. Big shouts to Zeal.
That's right.
Nasir Kadri, Hampton grad, formed Zeal Capital to really find underinvested entrepreneurs, not just Black, but like folks that are just in regions of the country or regions of the world where they're not finding capital. And he's one of the first investors in the company. It's panned out really, really well for him. Another Black investor, Serena Williams. I think you've probably heard of Serena.
I think we heard of her.
She's a Series A, one of the early round investors in Isuzu.
Oh, yes.
And then there's a Black LP at Motley Fool Ventures that invested in the company as well. And so this is Black.
Oh, you mean other investors who've invested in
Isuzu.
Isuzu.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
You got Impact America Fund led by Keisha Cash. They're an investor in the fund.
What a name.
And so, yeah, I mean, you got Black-led brilliance, Black investors. Not all the money is from Black folks, but like, yo, we can work together in this ecosystem to create all kinds of change, all kinds of unicorns. Let's get into this next one.
Flutterwave.
Founded by Olubenga Agboola.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Africa. Yo, can I give a shout to my Africans?
Listen, black is black, but yeah, absolutely.
So Flutterwave, this is a concept. Like one of my friends just got back from Africa, and she was telling me that it's very difficult for payments in places like Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying that like a lot of vendors, like if you're in a market, you can't just tap your card like you can.
Mm-hmm.
Another Western privilege, frankly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you have to like set up a payments thing. You need people's account numbers. Like, and that's a little,
that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot.
So this company, Flutterwave, is now the backbone of the African digital economy. And it allows companies like Uber and Netflix to accept local payments across Africa. And there's a lot of black entrepreneurs in this payments space.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have another client, I won't talk about them right now, but they've got a fintech that is doing tap to cash using like an Android to an iPad or an Android to a iPhone. And so this idea of
Some of these things are coming out of necessity, or there's just gaps in how we do things. And so they're like, all right, I got something for you.
Yeah, so Flutterwave, it is viewed as the Stripe of Africa. It's invisible plumbing that you may have, if you've been to Africa, if you've taken an Uber in these places, because a lot of times I've even been told that Uber will like not even have a payment. Like someone just came back from, one of my mentees was in, they went to Nigeria, they went to Ghana, and they went to South Africa. They're in business school. And they were saying that in some places, you take an Uber and you book it through the app, but you pay cash.
Mm.
Right?
Okay.
But like, how does Uber get paid?
Right.
Right? How do you not get robbed? Like she was saying, like she was trying to get $100 of US dollars exchanged into Naira.
Mm-hmm.
She was at the bank for an hour.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So like this idea of like fintechs in Africa especially is big. And this company Flutterwave is worth $3 billion now. It is the Stripe of Africa. It is the highest valued African startup. And prior to them starting it, like the payments were a mess. I think payments, frankly, still are a mess. Olabenga, who goes by GB. GB was a former Google and PayPal engineer.
Mm.
His co-founder worked at Netflix and Uber. And like they found a problem and made a solution.
That's it.
They raised $170 million in a Series D round that valued the company at $3 billion. Unicorns. I got one more. We got more unicorns. We got more unicorns. Whatever.
I'm sorry. It's because it came out unicorns with an M.
And then finally, you have Fireflies.ai. This is a voice-powered AI powerhouse valued at over $1 billion. And this was a company that started out with folks that were typing up notes. It's an AI note taker. Like I think
you're
seeing these all over the place now.
All over the place.
You've seen Firefly come into your Zoom
come
meeting?
To my Zooms. I had one the other day where the AI note taker came in before the actual live person. And I was like, she doesn't strike me as someone who would do that. So I declined it immediately.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, did you send an AI note taker? She was like, no, it just defaulted to that. I haven't joined yet. It just was weird. It was creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we are now, but
yeah. And this, I'll be these like, note takers, by the way, like recording method. We were in a meeting earlier. Like, are we supposed to be recording this? You were talking all sideways.
What happened was you guys were already in the meeting and I left and then I rejoined. So as someone who was rejoining, I got the notification that the meeting was being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And the meeting hadn't really started. Y'all were just having a conversation. Yeah. And I was like, it was just ironic, the timing, because I wasn't asking because of the nature of the conversation. I just was asking because I knew what we were talking about and I didn't want that to be recorded either. Yeah. But it was really funny though.
So I got to tell you this story about how this company started. So the two founders, one is a brother named Sam Udatong, who I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, and then also an Indian brother named Krish. They were mutual friends in college and they wanted to build an AI tool. This is 2016, by the way. Like, I don't think we were talking about AI.
Not like 2016. This. We weren't talking about this AI.
And so here's what they did. This is like so brilliant. So they told their early customers that an AI named Fred would join their meetings to take notes. So when a meeting started, the AI would join. I'll put AI in quotes. But it was actually Sam and Krish actually typing the notes themselves.
Gotta start somewhere.
For over 100 meetings, they were just going into Zooms and typing,
and typing
up
the notes. Wow. That's crazy.
And like they validated.
In 2016.
Like it validated the idea that people want note takers.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I mean.
And they're willing to pay for it.
We benefit from that, right? We have humans taking notes in our meetings.
Yes.
Because it's sometimes for us, if we're leading the conversation, it's hard to take notes and stay focused on moving the conversation along.
Yes.
But yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
The other thing that really blows my mind is that 2016 was a whole 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like it feels like it was shorter ago than that.
Yeah. It does.
It's just an aging thing. Like things that like today, I think I heard it's the 40th anniversary of Janet Jackson releasing Control.
Oh, that's crazy. That's a good album too.
Of course.
That's a great album.
It's just insane that was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it should be 40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right. Anyway.
Well, I was just learning to walk back then. So.
I wish maybe they have it. I'd love to see video of them typing these notes furiously. Like, how do you even get through a day?
Yo, but that's black folks. That's Indian folks. That's colored folks. That's minorities out here figuring out how to
make a way.
We've
been left out of opportunity so much. We just do it because it's like it's in our DNA.
Fake it till
we're solution oriented.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to break, and when we come back, we're going to close out this conversation about more black unicorns. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Ellen Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Momentum. We're back.
That's funny. I'm sorry.
Still thinking about the
still thinking about that. I'm also thinking about. I'll wait.
Now go ahead.
So thinking of improvising.
Yeah.
So today, I'm at home and I'm putting a load of laundry in between meetings, and something happens and I knock over the laundry detergent.
Mm-hmm.
I usually have it tilted to the side to use the little spout. Something happened. It fell over, and the cap on the regular spout, I guess, was off. So there's just clear laundry detergent just spreading out over the floor.
Yeah.
And all I see is dollar signs, because I don't know why I think laundry detergent is more expensive than it should be, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out how to salvage this laundry detergent.
Okay.
So I'm taking the little cup that comes with it.
This is liquid.
And this is liquid.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm trying to channel the spreading liquid into the cup. And I'm not having a lot of success because you can only, quote unquote, scoop so much liquid.
Mm.
So then I think to myself, if I can get a flat surface, almost like think a dustpan or like a cardboard-ish flyer on some heavy cardstock, then I'm thinking,
oh my gosh,
I can. So that's what I did. So I literally am able to go underneath the liquid because the...
This is getting worse.
Thing is like, so no, it wasn't. And so I scooped some up and then I made a little funnel and then I'm getting it back in the thing. And then after a while, I'm like, I do not have time for this.
Yeah.
So I found some blankets and towels that needed to be rewashed anyway. And I just soaked it all up and threw them in the wash. But so, in the moment, I was just like,
you were Carter G. Woodson.
I felt like it. I was just like, I cannot let all of this go to waste.
Yo, that's hilarious.
Anyway. It probably would have been funnier if you saw it rather than hearing the story, but
yeah, no, I'm picturing.
I thought I was doing something.
Yeah,
and probably then, saved a whole $2.
But hold on, what about the cleanup afterwards? You're like, I'm sure you're making all kinds of mess trying to clean
I
it
was,
up
but I found, like I said, I found some blankets and towels, and I soaked it all up, and they're just gonna go in the wash.
Yeah.
But then I had to go over it with a damp towel. So I'm just like, is this now going to be suds? Like, I just didn't know how it's going to turn out.
That's hilarious.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
To laminate.
So maybe that'll be the new invention.
No, it just, I'm more about prevention.
Okay.
Like, why was the cap off? Who did that?
That's funny. So before the break, we were talking about.
I'm not a unicorn.
Firefly AI. And how they were faking it, they were making it, and literally typing up the notes.
I just don't know why I love this so much, though.
And like this also kind of grew just like Calendly. It was, you know, instead of having a sales team or buying a billboard in Times Square, every time somebody invited Fred to their meeting, everybody else who was in that meeting, they saw the thing over there working. Eventually, they got it to work for real. Like they weren't just typing the notes after a while. And they would see the perfect notes delivered within 10 minutes and be like, yo, I need that for my next meeting.
Mm.
And today, this company, Firefly, worth over $1 billion. And their AI is used by 75% of Fortune 500 companies to take notes in their meetings.
Listen, saw a need. They made it happen.
You were using one of these note takers early. It wasn't Firefly. You were using one.
Oh, the dictation.
Like, yeah.
I can't even remember what it was called.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what would happen. It was basically a human being.
Yeah.
Who was.
Oh, that's what it was?
Yeah. You would have to dictate.
Yeah.
The notes. And you upload them somewhere or you email. Yeah. And then someone would type them out and send them to you in email form.
Okay.
So then you can cut and paste it into.
Yeah.
Your CRM.
So maybe you invented AI.
I did not invent AI.
Maybe you did. Yo, back in
they
the day.
They didn't keep up. I wonder today if and how they've evolved.
Yo, back in the day, one Christmas, I bought my dad software. It was a voice transcription software.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Dragon Speak or Tiger Talk or something like that. And I gave it to him. Imagine giving your... like.
Do you think this was like wizardry and demonic?
I just gave them, you remember
just
how software-
the name, Dragon Speak.
Yes, but like, you remember how software used to come in a little box, like a little flimsy box?
Yeah,
and it's inside,
CD-ROM.
It's a CD or a floppy disk,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And this is like probably like 1998 or something like this. I gave them this thing and I never install it for him. I don't show him how to use it. I don't think he understands where the mic plugs into the computer or anything.
No.
And it just sat there unopened for years. And like, I don't know if it ever worked or not. But like now we got Siri with voice, you know, memos and all that. But, so I kind of invented AI too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go with that. Another example of your unicorn-ness.
Yeah. So we're talking about Black History Month today, and we've highlighted a few Black unicorns. The idea of this conversation is really just to inspire you to know that, like, look, we are out here doing it. Like, we are succeeding in business against all odds. We are building billion-dollar companies, and these companies don't need your support. And I hate to say it, like, so flippantly. They need us to do business with them.
Yes.
And it's not just the billion-dollar startups. Like, it's your mom and pop chicken spot in your town.
The way that rhymes is
I got
bananas.
Bars, you know. It's the clothing brand being launched by a young person in your community. Like, the things that you really got to do for these businesses is, like, don't support them. Like, do business with them. Like, you did business with these other companies just because they were supplying good products. And that's also good advice for you entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs out there. Like, what's funny, like, our dry cleaners, we have 8 dry cleaners, 6 are in Maryland, 2 are in Indianapolis. And when I'm there working and I encounter a Black customer, I'll be like, hey, I'm one of the owners of the dry cleaner. And they're like, oh, it's Black owned. Like, and we high five and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never put us in a Black directory. Because I'm like, look, people aren't going to my dry cleaner because it's Black. It's because it's low price,
right?
Fast, convenient in their community.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's what Black business really needs to be. And you too can create a billion-dollar startup. Or if it's not a billion-dollar startup, a successful lifestyle business that pays your bills and gives you a good life.
Right. If you don't get to a billion, that's not failure, right?
Absolutely not.
That's not small dollars. Can we talk about this one in particular?
Yeah.
Goal Setter.
Okay. Tell me about Goal
Founded
Setter.
Founded by Tanya Vancourt.
Okay.
It's a family-focused financial literacy app. I feel like we kind of have to talk about that.
Okay.
is really designed to teach kids about saving and investing, mm-hmm. which really helps bridge the gap between, you know, wealth and the next generation. But I just love that she came up with that. And because, you know, I'm on my Go Sister Go tour. I just wanted to highlight that one because it's financial literacy.
Yeah. And Goal Setter is one of these. It's not a unicorn yet.
Right.
It's
correct.
On its way. Yeah. These Fair. Next these next couple ones we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
These are.
I got ahead of myself. But.
Other black. No, no. This is it. These are other black venture backed and startups that are really making a big wave in the venture community. Another one is Health in Her Hue. So Health in Her Hue was founded by a woman named Ashley Wisdom, and it's a digital health platform that's connecting Black women with culturally sensitive healthcare providers, which, again, we know that there's a lot of disparities in the treatment of Black women when it comes to healthcare. Y'all are being given aspirin and told to go home when y'all need surgery.
Right.
Right? And so Health in Her Hue is like a green book for healthcare for Black women.
Love it. Here's another family-friendly one. Okay. Outro, founded by Michael Broughton. It's a fintech platform that allows families to build credit using their everyday subscriptions like Netflix or Spotify. Mm. It really, kind of like Esusu, right? It takes spending and turns it into an asset. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's like fun spending.
Okay.
I mean, wouldn't you say Netflix and Spotify is more fun than rent?
Yeah, but like, yeah, if you can help your credit score improve, because like that's another one that's not on your credit report.
Yeah.
And maybe it should be. I love that.
I need to think about this for my young adult children.
Okay. Yeah.
Let them pay for some of this stuff.
Come on.
Or at least make it look like they're paying for it and then at least help them build some credit.
Here's another one. Black founded, Robin AI, founded by Richard Robinson. He's a former corporate lawyer, and really it's using generative AI to automate contract reviews. Like, this is one of those fields. The legal field is one of those fields that I think AI is kind of coming for, and Black folks are right at the,
of course, especially for
that.
I would think for, especially for small firms where you just may not have the resources to hire out humans to, or paralegals or more staff to do this stuff for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's, it can be quite efficient.
Here's another one that actually is about to hit unicorn status, or it's like right at the precipice of it. Spree AI.
Big word of the day, precipice.
Spree AI, Black founded, Black led, is bringing high fashion into high tech.
It's a lot of tech here.
Right? It's using AI to revolutionize digital commerce and virtual fitting rooms to see how this thing is fitting on you before you place the order. We got a lot. A good companies out here. I know we're out of time today, but hopefully today's conversation just inspired you. Like, yeah, we've got like immense Black history to be proud of. Going all the way back to our early inventions, like dry cleaning was the first patent ever received by a Black person in America, to some of these other inventions. But we also have companies that are founded and led by Black folks that are making big waves. We're talking about billion-dollar companies, billion-dollar startups that you never heard of. So hopefully we changed the way you see Black businesses a little bit today. And we're going to keep this theme of Black History Month going throughout the month. Maybe not every episode is so blackety-black like today, but we'll make sure that you're getting smarter, that you're celebrating Black history with us for this month of February.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, so if you are in need of a financial advisor or just an assessment of how things are going in your financial life, you've got some investments, you're not sure how they're looking, what your retirement cash flow will look like when it's time for you to step off the corporate rat race, feel free to go to our website, momentum-advisors.com. Go to the contact page and you can schedule time with either myself or Andrea or both if you're greedy. Momentum-advisors.com.
We'll make it happen.
So keep listening. We'll be back next week.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum.